It's hard to realize that some of your gasoline, synthetic building materials, maybe even your wife's nylons, originate here. In the oil fields of the Middle East. Two, it's hard to realize that more than one half of the total global impact of world trade is represented by the flow of oil, and much of that from the Middle East. Today, Japanese businessmen, Europeans, and Americans all vie for the long-term franchises, the long-term contracts or preferential trade agreements that will ensure a continuous flow of this life's blood of today's modern economies from Middle Eastern ports and to the rest of the world. The United States today faces a growing energy crisis. By the 1980s, we will have to import much more oil, and much of this to come from the Middle East. More oil than we're importing today by a great deal. In the midst of our energy crisis brought about by the voracious demands of the consumption of our modern technology, our standard of living, our American way of life, we find ourselves in the grips of an international monetary crisis. And now, as we take a look at the sources from which our energy comes, and this Middle Eastern oil, we're going to ask the question, what happens when the United States begins to import more oil than we produce domestically, and when sometimes politically volatile and unstable Middle Eastern countries have their hands on those spigots from which all that oil flows? We're in the midst of an energy crisis. More is the demand from everywhere. More electricity, more automobiles, more gasoline, more synthetics, more fibers, more plastics, more building materials, more oil, more nylons, more of the goods and services that make our lives the glittering, glamorous, affluent lives they are. And yet, in the United States, in the growing wake of energy crises, one after another, whether the brownouts or blackouts of big cities, or the growing lack of supply of certain critical non-renewable energy sources in our country, we find ourselves in the grips of an international monetary crisis. And this at the very same time that we begin to depend more and more upon energy sources from abroad and find ourselves having to pay more and more money for those energy sources. Thousands of products vital to our way of life are made from oil. Paper, paint, chemicals, medicines, man-made fibers for clothes and industrial use, synthetic rubber for tires, soap, detergents, plastics, fertilizers, and many, many others. Oil and oil products account for more than half of the world trade in physical volume. What if oil were cut off from a nation, any nation? Well, that nation, no matter whether it's a tiny European country, or whether it's over in Asia, or here in the United States or Canada, that nation would simply come to a grinding halt. I mean, of its total flow of life's blood. And oil is life's blood, not just to power equipment and machinery, not only to stoke the ovens or to keep the electrical energy flowing in some of those areas that might burn that type of fossil fuel, not just to keep furnaces and heaters going so that schoolrooms and public buildings don't have to be closed down when an untoward early spring storm comes along, or a late spring storm, and traffic grinds to a halt, and then schools are let out. And sometimes these schools that you hear being closed down in the middle western sections of the United States are not necessarily closed down because the kids can't get there. They may be closed down because of a lack of fuel. As a matter of fact, just a few months back in the United States, when we had some very terrible midwinter freezes in Texas and all the way down to Florida, there were schools and public buildings and whole cities that were virtually strangled to a standstill by this terrible, cold, icy grip of weather that came along. And it wasn't the danger of travel. It was the lack of fuel oils. They're becoming in very short supply. There can be no economic, social, political, or military activity without an abundant, free-flowing supply of energy and energy sources or resources. The failure to secure enough oil would be devastating to our position in the world, to our economy, and to our whole way of life, no matter in which country we might live. And yet I think the average housewife that is busily shopping in a supermarket, or the man that gets into his automobile to go to work or commute on the daily train, the businessman in the United States or Canada, just does not have the faintest idea of how much his or her food, the clothes on our backs, the gasoline in our tanks, our very income and our very life substance depends upon sometimes the favorable or unfavorable whims of foreign leaders of sometimes unstable countries. We have a massive dependency upon oil. I'd like to draw the analogy of a country likened to a man that might have gotten himself in a little bit too deep into a habit he thinks he can control. Now, might have begun with just normal cigarette smoking and gone to marijuana. Maybe the guy got hooked on heroin. Well, in the United States, for a number of reasons, and some of them have to do with policies that are hard to understand about the production of American oil fields themselves, preferential trade agreements, the need to do business with certain countries, competition from other countries abroad, rising costs of oil in South American fields, and of course attempts from the United States to get oil from Arabs, and they're not all that excited about our policies in support of Israel. But in the United States, we're finding now more and more that we are going to have to become dependent upon a flow of our life's blood for future energy sources from foreign countries, and some of these in very unsavory areas so far as we politically might view it today. So it's much like a person getting hooked on heroin. We began with just a little, and it was a kind of a tokenism. We didn't really, at one time in our history, feel we had much need to import foreign oil. We could produce just about all we needed and even export some oil. But first, beginning just a little bit here and there as a matter of our preferential trade agreements or our desire to do business with foreign countries for various political reasons or to keep them a part of a dollar economy, America began to import oil from abroad. Little by little, we found our voracious, greedy appetite in our own energy consumption at home, our growing technology, our fabulous, sprawling megalopolises where the millions of us live like teeming ants in some kind of a colony or a beehive. We found that we couldn't get along without that foreign oil. In a moment, I'm going to show you that in the 1980s, there will really be a crisis when we will come to the point we will be forced to import more oil than we ourselves can produce. And there are predictions, which we can show you, about when United States oil reserves might eventually run completely out.
200,000 miles of high-tension transmission lines dramatize the plain truth article on the energy crisis. This feature story, which appeared early last year, is available in reprint form. What's behind the energy crisis? Also, request a free subscription to The Plain Truth, the world's unique news magazine. Without anything to sell, The Plain Truth points to a happier life through sharing, helping, and serving. The only possible solution to produce peace between nations and individuals. Now published in 5 languages and read by more than 5 million people around the world, The Plain Truth can be yours every month without any obligation. Be sure to request What's Behind the Energy Crisis and The Plain Truth Magazine. Write Ambassador College, Box 111, Pasadena, California. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC.
It's hard to realize that world oil demand in this decade will equal the total oil consumed by mankind throughout all of history. But that's where we are. Today, the world needs around 50 million barrels of oil a day. That's every single day, and that's a prodigious amount of oil. By the end of the decade, it could be over 90 million barrels a day. Daily petroleum consumption worldwide in millions of barrels seen here from 1960, 1970, and where we are by the purple line for those of you that have color sets. And you can see where it is, just slightly above 50 millions of barrels a day, and it goes clear out the top by 1980. That means that today's oil needs would fill a train of oil tank cars of 10,000 gallon capacity each, nearly 1,500 miles long, By 1980, oil needs would fill such a train of cars of the same capacity, 10,000 gallons capacity each, nearly 3,000 miles long every single day. And that's a lot of oil. That means those who control the major oil spigots control the life's blood of modern, technologically oriented economies. And they could, if they grew powerful enough militarily, dictate world affairs. So let's look more closely at the world energy crisis as it relates to oil, black gold, and particularly to the new critical position of danger in which the United States finds itself. The United States today needs over 17 million barrels of oil a day. Yet, domestically, we produce only about 12 million barrels a day. 5 or 6 million barrels a day, not much, perhaps, need to be imported at the present time. But look how the picture has changed, as I said earlier, from the past, and how it will change on into the future. For many decades before World War II, the United States had to import only a very small quantity of oil. In 1950, it imported about 1/12 of all of its needs, and in 1960, 1/6. In fact, until recently, the United States had been one of the world's great oil exporting nations. But today, the United States must import about 30% of all of its oil. So as I said, the analogy is like the toying with the thing originally and then maybe eventually getting hooked. Here you see United States oil supply imports versus production. The daily imports by the pie graph there of 1970, somewhat below the 30% figure where it is today. And by 1980, 45% daily imports as opposed to that shrinking daily U.S. production. And look on into the 1980s where it goes over the top at 65% needed from imported sources from other countries. Now, much of today's oil comes from South American imports and principally Venezuela and some other countries. But Venezuela is nearing peak production capacity and also demanding a very stiff price for its oil. Where, then, will we turn for the extra 10 million barrels of oil we will need daily by 1980 or the 15 million barrels of oil by 1985? We're forced to take a look at the Middle East. And the Middle East is where the action is, where oil is concerned. It's where the big power confrontation is going to occur, not only economically, not only over oil, not only militarily, but religiously, spiritually, and it is prophesied, believe it or not, in the Bible. Now, the interesting thing to me is that when you look at biblical prophecy, and one-third of the Bible is prophecy, and it talks about areas of the world that we look at on a map today, Libya, Arabia, countries like this are mentioned in the Bible, that continually the Bible views history, sociological development, linguistic development, anything from the geographical point of view of Palestine, what used to be called Palestine or Israel, and the Middle Eastern areas. Prophetically, it views everything that is happening in the world today from that Middle Eastern area. And Jesus Christ of Nazareth talked about things that would take place in the Middle East. Any even part-time student of Bible prophecy knows that biblical prophecies predict a giant, grand smash, finale, climactic Armageddon battle in the Middle East between the big powers of the world of that time. Is that battle even beginning now to shape up in the sense that the struggles for the life's blood of nations and that some of the cities and the countries that are involved represent the great religions of the world are all in the same area? That this is the place where West and East nearly always come into conflict. This is the place where the two, the Oriental and the Occidental portions of the world, come grinding into headlong conflict. Time and again it has happened that way. In World War II, as America looked at the forces of Rommel cutting like a knife through North Africa, headed toward Alexandria, they could hear the guns and see the flashes on the horizon. And as the British 8th Army under Montgomery tried to withstand Rommel's army and did turn the tide at El Alamein. But earlier to that time, we began to see this vast pincers movement, as it were, of the Japanese advancing over the roof of the world and through China into Burma, threatening India, bombing Rangoon. We saw the eventuality then of the Middle Eastern oil states falling to the Axis powers, and we saw these pincers, as it were, getting ready to meet right in the Middle Eastern area. Today, something like that is beginning to happen. Instead of militarily, however, it is in various agents, representatives of big corporations in the Central European countries, the growing might of the European Economic Community or the common market, of Japanese businessmen, all of them vying in places like Abu Dhabi, which many Americans never heard of, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, of course more well known, for oil reserves for the future. So it's quite a state of affairs when the United States now is forced to look to Middle Eastern Arabic states for future oil supplies. George A. Lincoln, who was director of the Office of Emergency Preparedness, says, and I quote, "The answer is that our demand is growing so fast that we are going to have to look to the Middle East and North Africa, where 3/4 of the world's oil reserves are located, and for most of future increases." Now, this chart shows proven reserves of world petroleum, where they really have explored and they feel that the reserves are there, in terms of billions of barrels. The Middle East and Africa representing 440 billions of barrels. The United States about 50 billion barrels. It's in the Middle East. That's where the world's most extraordinary concentration of giant and supergiant oil fields lie, and more so than any other place on the face of the earth that is known to man. Now, while only 5% of United States oil now comes from the Middle or the Near East, officials estimate by 1985 that 35% of oil needs may be flowing from that area. In the 1967 Middle East crisis, the Jew-Arab War, there was no major threat to the United States' oil needs, since the United States at that time was importing only a very small fraction of its needs from that area. The picture will rapidly change during this decade and on into the 1980s. We may have no major alternatives for imported oil if the Middle East explodes, as a matter of fact, and neither will Europe or Japan. So the vital interests of the big powers are all inextricably tied up in Middle Eastern oil fields, and that includes Russia and her desires in the Middle East for growing Russian dominance around the world. And that, of course, is a Russian policy, and she still has not abandoned it, no matter what we think about Soviet-U.S. relations. The greatest increases in oil imports from now on will be then from the Middle East, especially from Saudi Arabia and Iran. The rapid change of events in the Middle East might be typified by the recent change of mind by the relatively conservative-minded Shah of Iran. He announced recently that his country will not renew its present agreement with the Western oil consortiums after 1979 and will take over the oil industry and run it independently on a first-come, first-serve basis. Said one big U.S. oil company president, "If dependency on Middle East oil reaches 40%, that is, I think it would have such an impact on foreign policy that we would no longer be masters of our own fate." He said, "How much can we afford to become dependent upon somewhat unstable nations for the basic underpinnings of our entire nation? Especially since these areas, both of them, Saudi Arabia and Iran, the principal places where that supply must come from, are basically hostile toward many facets of U.S. foreign policy and particularly the United States Middle East policy." A good question indeed. When we become more and more dependent upon these countries for our very life's blood, well, can we afford to? Can we take the risk? And is there any other possible alternative? The answer is no. The risk apparently must be taken. What does that mean on into the 1980s? And what does Bible prophecy say?
The richest, most powerful group of nations on earth, the United States and British Commonwealth, are part of one of the most mysterious puzzles of all time. The prophecies of the Bible mention such small nations as Libya, Syria, and Ethiopia, but they seem to omit all reference to our peoples. How could such important nations be left out of inspired prophecy? This mysterious puzzle is unraveled in the full-length book, The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy. This book reveals the true identity of our peoples from the pages of your Bible. And yet it goes beyond past history and shows you what to expect in the future. For your free copy of The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy, write Ambassador College, Box 111, Pasadena, California. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC.
One-third of the Bible is prophecy, and the Bible foretells conditions and trends that are occurring right now in our day. It isn't some obscure portion of the Bible in a technical little term that means some ancient race way back when, which you then interpret from the Hebrew, and then you have this special little formula of numbers, and then you determine something else. You stand around, look weird, act strange, and you believe thus and such. That doesn't cut it. That isn't where it's at. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about biblical prophecies of your Bible written by men such as Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, and prophecies of Jesus Christ of Nazareth himself that talked about the trends and the conditions that are occurring inside major powers right now today. Our peoples are identified in the pages of the Bible. It doesn't leave out the powerful United States, the British Commonwealth of countries, Canada, and some of the other countries of the world. They are also mentioned in the Bible, just as little countries are, like Libya and Ethiopia and some of the smaller countries of the Middle East. These countries are identified as well, and the entire power blocks of this modern world are represented by the ancient names of those peoples before they migrated to the New World, as it was called, in the discovery era of history. Now, this energy crisis, the dependence of America upon allies, the Bible calls consorting with lovers. He describes, God does, in his word, his own people as having abandoned his laws. So far, so good. We've done that. We in the United States of America do not keep the laws of God, the Ten Commandments of God, and we do not pretend to. Then he says the next step is dependency upon foreign allies for their military power and strength, for their political or economic support. And first and most important of all is that the Bible itself even talks about oil flowing through Egypt. It talks about Ephraim and the British people depending upon the Syrian people or Assyrian people, and that does mean, believe it or not, the peoples of modern-day Germany. It shows then that our peoples would depend more and more upon Middle Eastern countries and upon European countries. And the Bible takes issue with that and says, because we depend upon human, man-made alliances, upon the machinations of world power politics, upon the economic maneuverings of power mad and dollars or rubles or whatever they are, hungry human beings, because we have rejected and denied God's laws, that we are going to become more and more mired in the inextricable morass of our own international political meanderings. And God calls it like being thrown upon a sick bed, that all of our own lovers, whom he calls our foreign allies, will turn upon us and betray us eventually. Now, does that mean that you go around with, like, pinning the tail on the donkey and take some scripture of the Bible and stick it on the map and say, I think this dire consequence is going to happen here? God is up in his heavenly armchair, and he's shooting his lightning bolts down upon these helpless human beings and causing all these things to happen. Bible prophecy is as much a cataloging or an analysis of those things which God Almighty knew would take place according to allowing human nature to run full sway without any interventions or interferences from him, and therefore what the logical outcome was going to be. It is as much that kind of a summary of human events in advance as it is divine interventions from God from time to time. And the Bible does describe a giant confrontation between the big powers of the world in the Middle East, and it even describes a giant spiritual confrontation in that same area. I remind you again that the Jew-Arab crisis is not over, and that this is the one area where, as I've said time and again, in the wake of the Vietnam War, looking back in retrospect, we're going to see Europe and the Middle East are going to dominate our headlines, and they're beginning right now. And I want to tell you that the Plain Truth magazine will be on the spot. It will have the inside news. It will give you the articles in depth about the meaning of power crises and energy crises, about the oil crisis growing right now in the Middle East and what is happening there, way before any other publication you can ever begin to read. And furthermore, it will put it in the perspective of Bible prophecy and show you exactly where we go from here. Now, the greatest increases in oil imports from now on have got to come from Saudi Arabia and the Middle East. Robert Brougham, who is former chairman of the board of Aramco, the leading U.S. oil firm in Saudi Arabia, testified at a recent congressional hearing that he felt there was no alternative to Middle East oil, which was necessary for national security. But he also expressed fears that the Arab states would use their oil as a political weapon, since, and I quote, the United States is becoming isolated from its European allies by reason of its Middle East policy. It may therefore be the only target for retaliations. Again, the United States seems to get into the situation where we're hanged if we do and we're hanged if we don't. We're depending upon foreign alliances. We're not depending upon God. People get a hoot and a sneer and a derisive, scornful look on their face and get a kind of a sardonic chuckle out of someone saying that a great, vast, powerful, technologically oriented, and great military power, the supergiant of the United States, ought to depend on God. We will see. The day will come when we will wish with all of our beings that we had. That day is going to come, all right, and the trends and the curves, the conditions are right now obvious if we just had the wit to look. Once the United States or foreign oil companies could practically dictate terms, oil concessions and so on, from the Middle East or the African countries. After all, we used to say they can't drink their oil, they got to do something with it. We thought those people were stupid over there and they just built about 16 mansions out in the desert without plumbing and roll around in about 20 Cadillacs with entourages, all these gals, have their harem go with them, and travel in about 16 707s all over the country. And we just had this idea about the Arab peoples being very backward. Well, all of that's changing now. They are beginning to learn. They're beginning to take over 25, 30, 40% of their oil business. And more, the idea of nationalizing these oil industries is a part of Arab policy in Arabia, in Iran, and other countries. Countries such as Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, Kuwait, Qatar, and Iraq, and other fields have decided to achieve participatory control of foreign oil operations by small steps, a quarter now, 25%, growing to 51% by 1982. And the growing trump cards being held by the Arabs are not lost on them. Said one observer, they could either shut off our supplies or raise the price to $6, $7, $8, or $10 a barrel if they want to. What happens then by the middle 1980s? The Bible predicts a time when God's people, and we are the people who had that responsibility and wore that title, not as a favorite people, but as a chosen people for a great commission, which we have abandoned and trampled underfoot. But the time when God's people would be besieged within their gates. Now, we don't live in stone castles anymore. In modern terminology, in a modern technological world, being besieged has to do with things like sanctions and embargoes. It has to do with things like having your life's blood cut off at its very source. And this is a growing concern for U.S. oil companies and for American leadership. And it will continue to be of growing concern on into the 1980s. You ought to write. For this magazine, you might not get this particular cover. This is a sample of different months' issues of the Plain Truth magazine, in-depth 52 pages full of color and illustrated articles about some of these very issues I discuss every single time on the program. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong, goodbye, friend.
You have seen Garner Ted Armstrong. Send your letters to Ambassador College, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Or Post Office Box 44, Vancouver, BC.